The Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Kurt Russell Hour, a.k.a. the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hey, before we go into the podcast, giving sunshine to the world and talk about some fierce people, I want to tell you about the time my wife and I met. We met in London, and I gave her my cellular and said, "What's your number?" She pushed in the digits, and I called her several days later. We got into my first Dodge Avenger, which I called the Silver Surfer, and we had a fantastic 4 days acting like street kings until the car tire had a puncture. I played it cool, didn't go to a dark world or feel like a loser or lost a teardrop diamond. Eventually, an Iceman named Scott Pilgrim pulled up and helped me fix a tire. With the tire fixed, we listened to the Nanny Diaries on audiobook and got a perfect score on a quiz called Not Another Teen Movie. Eventually, we hit a massive snowdrift, and I retrofitted my car with TMNT snowpiercing gear. We were like winter soldiers battling for Terra in an Age of Ultron. It was awesome.
I think that's from my favorite Shakespeare play, right?
Yep, it's called Evans to Murgatroyd.
Oh, okay. I guess that's just foreshadowing for later in the podcast. John Levengood, do you have any special sonnets to recount to us?
I have none, but I'll just identify that that came from a little challenge that was imposed upon Mark by himself to make as big of a sentence as he could using only Chris Evans movie titles. So maybe you guys want to rewind the podcast a little bit and go to IMDb and see just how many movies he covered in that little... In that little sonnet.
I think there were at least 10, right?
It was all of them, folks.
It was all of them.
Let's see, I did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25.
How long did that take you to do, Mark?
I don't know. 6.7 minutes.
Okay.
to reach your perfect score.
Well, because like John said, I challenged myself. So we were joking around one day, and I came up with half of it just on the fly. So then I just added the rest.
Right. No, I think it's I'm actually really impressed. It flows pretty well. I think my high school English teacher would have given it an A, although she was kind of easy.
I'd have been happy with a B. You know, I was that kind of student.
Okay. Well, I mean, you made it this far in life, so.
I mean, give me the don't. I don't want to do Bruce Willis though. I mean, Chris Evans is fine, but if I had to do a Bruce Willis, that's like 75 films.
No, I think that would probably make a good segue for our main topic at hand. But there are other matters to attend to first. Just as we start every podcast with, you should begin with listener questions. I always want to say reader questions. No one's actually reading this podcast.
I mean, we have website readers, yeah. but we're catering to our podcast viewers today, listeners today.
Yeah, so true. Normally, Levengood gets he talks to his horror crowd and brings in some horror questions via Twitter. But this week, I did something different. I went into crowded streets and I just harassed people until I forced them to give me questions. Right. So these are from the poor people that I met on the side of the road that I harassed. And they were actually pretty good questions they came up with.
Did they just think you were a belligerent hobo?
No, I mean, I was well-dressed, had a cardigan on. I think they were more confused by anything, you know?
I mean, you're asking them, like, give me movie trivia questions. Yeah. Like, look, here's a dollar. Like, get yourself a sandwich. No, I need a movie trivia question.
Exactly. And no, I got some doozies. But no, actually, we got these from our Facebook MFF page. And the first one is from Megan. And she wrote, "What book adaptation do you want to see? It cannot already be in the works, and who would be in it?" Hmm. So, I guess I'll start with one, but I we talked about this earlier, but I would love, Bruce Campbell wrote a book called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way, where he gets cast in this incredibly high profile Oscar nominated Oscar bait film. And it stars Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere, and he gets into it and he turns it into this total B movie with monster trucks, nut hits, and, like, you know, push up bras, and it all turns into like this big ninja kung fu thing. So I'd love to see Bruce Campbell make this movie. I mean, it would be hokey and there'd be a lot of gags, but I think his fanboys would love it.
Love him.
For me, like, there's actually this book that I read a few times called The Thief of Always, and it's by Clive Barker. And, you know, Clive Barker brought us the Hellraiser movies and Nightbreed. And so this Thief of Always, it's like this really dark, like, childlike fable, but with, like, a lot of adult twists. It's like a kid goes to Neverland or something. It's like there's Christmas and Halloween every day, way before The Nightmare Before Christmas, I think. And but either way, you know, in this fantasy, like, it goes from all, like, Alice in Wonderland, Neverlandy, to some dark, twisted, almost horror from fantasy. And I just loved it. And I don't know. In this book, The Thief of Always, it's got a 10-year-old kid as the protagonist. And then a lot of kind of supernatural creatures in it that would be kind of voiced over. But, like, there's also a dark teacher role. And I kind of think the kid, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. But there's this the creator of this fantasy world is called Hood. And it turns out that this Hood is evil. And I just imagine the voice of Billy Zane. Like, I think of Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight. And I think that smooth Billy Zane, or Zoolander Billy Zane, I feel like that'd be a good evil voice to give to, like, almost a child wonderland, like a supernatural monster.
He's like a cad, right? When I think of Billy Zane from those movies, I think cad.
A cad.
Wait,
a braggart.
Wait, yeah, define cad. Don't say Billy Zane.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Like, also this, like, in this, I mean, this book is really obscure. I get that. But if you guys, like, look up this book, if you're like Hellraiser fans or Nightbreed fans and you read about this book, it's going to immediately make people want to get this book. If you liked Hellraiser or any of that, like, this is a weird kind of turn for Clive Barker. And as a result, it's something that I really want to see realized on screen, because it really is a horror fantasy.
So it's like Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, in like Pan's Labyrinth, like Pan's Labyrinth kind of starts out seeming like a child's fantasy, but you know things are horribly wrong with it right away. Like, it looks off. Whereas in this book, everything starts out like Alice in Wonderland, and it's just the things that people say that seem a little off. But then later, like, the longer the child spends in this fantasy land, the more and more distorted. It becomes more obvious that things are wrong just gradually over time.
So, two questions. Would you watch this film while surfing on your portable DVD player?
As the horror Leviathan, I think that I'm obligated to watch it in no other way.
And then you said Clive Barker takes, like, a weird turn. Like, when Clive Barker takes a weird turn, I'm scared.
Yeah.
Like, and I say that because as weird of a turn as any of his books normally are, they're all... All of his books are super weird and dark kind of from the start. Whereas, again, this starts out like the first 10 pages, you'd almost think that this was written for a 12-year-old, but with a good vocabulary. You know, like the first chapter, you really think you're reading a young adult or a child's book with a good vocabulary. And then it really does start to turn well after you get into the movie, or the book in this case.
Nice. And so my favorite book of all time is Foucault's Pendulum. And if you think about movies, what's that? Angels and Demons and The Da Vinci Code and National Treasure. You have all these films about these people hunting down, like, these old Templar religious conspiracies. But this book is written by Umberto Eco. And I'm thinking Sam Rockwell, Jared Harris, Idris Elba, Elizabeth Olsen, and Alice Braga in it. But it's about these three guys who come up with this, like, fake religion, this fake story, and they add in like a religion from South America, from Europe, and they actually, like, write this great, not great, but this really convincing fake occultist novel. And so these cults start believing in it, and it becomes like this race where these cults are chasing down the stuff from this fake book. And like it's really good. Like, and it actually it becomes. I'm really not explaining it well, but it's just a beautiful book, and I just like that these three guys invent their own religion. People think it's real. They start buying into it, and it just gets really weird from there. So it's just like this cheeky play on the angels and demons seriousness about these guys who create something. Like they take like they bring in the word spark plug, and then they add it to an occult thing, and then they do a word generator, and it comes up with this line, and everyone buys it. I think it would be an amazing film. Like I think it makes me crack up. So I mean, I would love to see that turn into something. What do you got, Lazabeth?
Okay, well, I guess I'm cheating a little bit, but technically it's a book, right? It's more of a graphic novel. The quote-unquote book that I picked is The Killing Joke. It's a graphic novel written by Alan Moore, who also wrote The Watchmen. It's considered by a lot of people to be the quintessential Joker story. It kind of delves into the origins of the Joker. It also kind of... It's also where the Joker paralyzes Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, and that's kind of the leads into her becoming... into Oracle, you know, in the wheelchair. It's just, you know, I would love to see that made into a movie. I don't know. I don't know if it ever will be because it just might be too dark of a...
Well, you know, and the only Joker who would ever work for that I've seen would have been the Heath Ledger Joker.
Well, you know...
Jared Leto could do it, man.
When it was first announced that Heath Ledger was going to be the Joker, a lot of people were up in arms about it. You know, he was still dealing the backlash from Brokeback Mountain. So a lot of people were like, well, the guy from Brokeback Mountain is going to be the Joker? Like, is that going to work? So I don't know. I don't know if you guys ever read The Killing Joke. But, you know, I would love to see, like, a really... Because the Killing Joke is really, really dark, actually. Like, Batman almost kills the Joker in this one. And I wouldn't... No one really would have blamed him for it. So
I wish that was done under the Christopher Nolan franchise regime.
Yeah, I don't know. There were rumors that he was going to incorporate some elements of The Killing Joke in it, but that never materialized. Happened. So,
you know what graphic novel that I thought was ridiculous to turn like which seems like the easiest thing to make is that Whiteout with Kate Beckinsale. That was a graphic novel. Like the whole plot is like there's a bunch of whiteouts and you can't see anything. So that'd be the easiest thing ever to draw. Like, if I was a graphic artist, like, oh, white out 5 pages and just do a bunch of bubbles with people talking. Like, that'd be the easiest movie to make.
That was a graphic novel before it was that Kate Beckinsale movie?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I think...
Yeah.
Wow, I think we're all just kind of stunned. That was based on a graphic novel?
No, really. I feel like I'm in the middle of a joke, and he's about to go like, gotcha.
No, he's dead serious. For all you listeners, I do that a lot. I make up a lot of stuff. But no, I'm serious about this. It was a graphic novel, and I think it's the easiest thing to ever write. Like, oh, hey, it's a whiteout. Then 5 pages of like, where are you? Where are you? You come here. No, you come here, Mr. Killer. How about I just be quiet and you can't see me? How about I just wait?
Oh, that's so meta. I love it.
Okay, wait, earlier you mentioned Idris Elba, which made me think of Pacific Rim, and you asked about Pan's Labyrinth, and all those things made me think of Guillermo del Toro. He'd be the perfect guy to direct my movie adaptation for Clive Barker's Thief of Always, this horror fantasy. Like, you were asking who would cast it, I have my director, too.
So if he's doing it, he would put Ron Perlman in it, he would have Charlie Hunnam. He would put all his, like, it would just be Ron Perlman in every role.
And there would be something clockwork in the movie, because every single Guillermo del Toro movie has something that's like clockwork.
Imagine Ron Perlman as a 10-year-old kid.
Like, what if it was the CGI movie like Monster House and the little kid has Ron Perlman's voice?
Lots of cigarettes.
Like, it looks like a cute little kid. You're expecting like a 12-year-old Macaulay Culkin voice and you get Ron Perlman. And he's not even trying to sound like a kid. He's just Ron Perlmaning.
All right. So now that we've – oh, and also I wish they would have taken World Wars. I like the movie World War Z, but I wish they could have done an HBO special of it, like a 10-part. And the book that became a movie, Unbroken, that became a movie as well. And it was so rushed, I hated it. So I think the World War II film Unbroken should have been an HBO special. So, but now the next question is, and this is from one of the Shark Dropper crew, He said, if you could recast one Martin Scorsese film with Billy Zane to star, what movie would be in it and what role would he take?
Okay, so the moment I heard Martin Scorsese, I just went to his IMDb and scrolled through his movies, and I had my answer for this right away. It's got to be Ray Liotta's role from Goodfellas. Ray Liotta plays Henry, the lead role. And he was just so outspoken, and he had all these expressive eyes. And when he laughed, his mouth opened up like he was the Joker. And I just imagine like a young Billy Zane from Demon Knight, pretty much, with all that expressiveness and from Zoolander and all his roles. He's got those eyes that just capture you and that loud laugh when he wants it. I think that he'd be perfect in that.
Would he have
Scorsese's Goodfellas?
Would he have a wig? Or would he have like
he'd have his hair. He'd have his hair. So think of when he was a little like a total braggart in Titanic, like when he had his hair.
Just with the wavy hair.
Yeah,
I like it. So for me, I want him. I don't want him lost in the shuffle of a lot of other actors. I want him front and center, and I want them to film it now. So I want Scorsese to remake Raging Bull with Billy Zane. Because like Raging Bull is one of the quintessential. Like, De Niro's performance in that film is you know, if you had people put down a list of the 20 greatest performances of all time. I think his name would pop up in the majority of those lists, 1 through 20, somewhere. So I just want to see Billy Zane now, after being in, like, the Mummy sequels and every direct-to-DVD Blood Rain that you could possibly do, as playing Jake LaMotta in a gritty Scorsese film.
Called Raging Zane?
It could be like a, you know, Travolta in Pulp Fiction, maybe. Or it could just be terrible and be lovely.
I think it's just going to be terrible, but I think I would enjoy watching it. It'd be like watching a train wreck.
But imagine everyone's like imagine waking up and, you know, you're a Hollywood producer and you open up, or you're De Niro and you open up the Hollywood Reporter in the morning while drinking your coffee. And there's this a big picture of Billy Zane from Scorpion King 6. And they're like, the new Jake LaMotta and Raging Bull. De Niro would be like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I don't know. I want it to happen. I don't know how it would work, but imagine the press around it. Like, the first picture of Billy Zane. Like, you know, he has to gain a lot of weight for it. Like, he has, like, I don't know. I think this would be the weirdest thing ever, and I want to see it.
I don't even know if Billy Zane can put on weight. Like, he was like the Timothy Oliphant of his time. He was always so sleek.
No, I'm talking nowadays, though. Like,
right. I don't know what he looks like now, but I imagine he's still sleek.
So he doesn't want to gain weight. So he's actually like playing a guy with a gut, but he refuses to put on weight. So they put a little fat suit on him.
No, he just puts on like oversized clothes and like.
He doesn't learn any boxing either. No. So like the boxing matches are just the worst thing.
When he steps into the boxing ring, he does like an old school like put in the Duke stance.
He has that mustache. Yeah. You know, this
really high.
Yeah, the twirly mustache.
Yeah. Like, he's back twirling his mustache saying, in between rounds.
Put him up.
You speak MASH, eh? I'm Jake LaMotta, say.
I'm a raging bull.
I'm raging bull, say. Did you even read the script? Who needs a script, say?
I feel like that's 90% of Billy Zane's movies. Like, he just shows up and does, like, what he thinks is necessary.
Well, he was in that Blood Rain movie, and I think he was in a chair the entire time. He was. Now he thinks. In Blood Rain, he was sitting in a chair the entire time. And then he was in The Name of the King 2 with Dolph Lundgren, and he was in a chair the whole time then, too.
Such an armchair actor, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Hey-o.
MASH, eh? Jake LaMotta. All right.
Elizabeth, so. what do you got on this?
Okay, so this is one that I know you guys didn't think of, all right? But in 2008, Martin Scorsese made a documentary called Shine a Light about the Rolling Stones. So it's technically it's technically a Martin Scorsese movie, right?
Yeah.
I would love it if they redid Shine a Light, but have Billy Zane as like the lead singer. Or like the lead guitarist of the Rolling Stones.
Hold on now. is Billy Zane himself pretending, or are we now putting an actor with a playing the role of someone else in a documentary where everyone else is themselves?
It's whatever Billy Zane wants to do. He's gonna go up there and he's probably gonna be drunk and he's gonna stumble through paint of black.
He's gonna be sitting down the whole time.
Yeah, probably.
Keith Richards was acting the role of Mick Jagger, but you didn't tell any of the other people in the Rolling Stones that this was going to be happening. They thought it was just a legit documentary.
See, the thing is,
he just comes out acting like Mick Jagger, and they're just like, stop being a dick. Get the hell off the set.
Well, the thing is, Keith Richards probably wouldn't know this because he would just be too wasted or too high to notice.
I think that if Keith Richards stopped doing drugs, he'd die.
Wait. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's mummified. I think he's still high. I think he's Weekend at Bernie's.
Okay.
Hey, I'm going to that concert in Atlanta in I think June 9th.
There's a Weekend at Bernie's concert?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
A lot of 80s covers. No, Rolling Stones. No, wait. So wait, you're saying
okay.
So they make this entire documentary, but all the members of the Rolling Stones are so whacked out they don't even notice that they switched Billy Zane for Mick Jagger?
That's my hypothesis.
All the interactions are completely normal?
Yeah, except for, Billy Zane just stumbling through all the Rolling Stones songs.
What, did he learn the Rolling Stones songs?
No, it's Billy Zane.
Or you could do it like Nutty Professor the Clumps, where Billy Zane plays all the roles.
Oh, yeah.
He has a bunch of different wigs.
He's playing all the instruments while he's singing the songs. He's also playing everybody in the audience.
It would just be called, Shining a William, I guess?
Shine a Zane.
Yep, Shine a Zane. Zane a Light.
Yeah.
Zane a Light.
No, in all seriousness, though, the Shine a Light documentary was actually really well done. I actually enjoyed it. I'm not actually a fan of Rolling Stones, but, the documentary was good. I think it would be 100% better with Billy Zane, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's good.
Wait, I'm still thinking about De Niro reading The Hollywood Reporter with Billy Zane casting the new role, the remake of Taxi Driver.
I think that Robert De Niro would re-rage.
Yeah.
If you saw that.
He would go back into training for sure.
Raging Bull again.
Yeah.
Raging Grudge Match.
Raging Red Bull. Hint, hint.
All right, Mark. Does that do it for listener questions for now?
Yeah. No, I just want to thank Jonathan. And I want to thank Megan for the questions. They were wonderful. And they led us to Billy Zane faking Rolling Stones songs.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, usually I come up with a corny segue, but it's hard to come up to go. It's hard to segue from Billy Zane and Rolling Stones to Chris Evans. So, Mark, I'm just going to let you take it.
Absolutely, Lazavath. So, I watch a lot of movies, right? And you start to recognize patterns. And so, the more Chris Evans films I watch, and we've actually talked about a lot of them, Snowpiercer, Sunshine, they're some of my favorite films, but I started noticing something weird. So in Sunshine, they're going to reignite the sun. Spoilers. They're going to reignite the sun. They're in a really hot spot, and Chris Evans freezes to death, right? In Snowpiercer, they're surrounded by snow, but Chris Evans burns up. In Fantastic Four, he's the Human Torch. In Captain America, he freezes at the end. So I started noticing all this fire and ice things, and then I started looking deeper, and I started noticing that you should never go on a train ride with Chris Evans. You should never... be around, he'll always sacrifice his body. He's always the guy that'll do that. He's always riding motorcycles. So John, why did you like this post, Levengood?
Well, I pretty much just fell in love with this article that you would put on our website right away, because this just took the geekiness to a new level. A lot of times we'll discuss movies, we'll overanalyze components of movie performances and maybe link them a little bit to past performances or characters, but in this one, this hit the meta geeky level. You were linking movies that had no business being compared to each other whatsoever across the entire filmography, and I just think this is pure movie geeky fun.
Yeah, and the floodgates open, because as I was looking through these films, not only so I made the connection between the cold and the burning to death, and then the really hot and freezing. But then I found out that Chris Evans has great shields in his movies. So in Sunshine, that ship has an amazing shield that blocks all of the rays of the sun. And then in Captain America, he has that amazing shield. And then in Push, he can create really baller shields just, by putting his hands out like he's raving. So, there's good shields in here. I don't know. I just...
And in What's Your Number, he uses Anna Faris to shield him from his one night stands.
He did.
Ooh, yeah. That's not looking good.
Exactly. And, oh, I didn't even put that in there. And like, you know, but I do think that if you don't want to be rolling with him on certain missions, like if you go on a train with Chris Evans, you're going to die.
Yeah, most
likely. So on Snowpiercer, he was supposed to fail, but he succeeds and everybody dies except for two people. And his best friend dies. And on Captain America, he and Bucky go to get on that train to get that Zola guy so they could bring him back, get him behind bars. And his best friend Bucky dies, or, you know, not really. But you don't want to be a friend of Chris Evans and attack a train with him.
So what I'm hearing is that in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles CGI movie where he voiced Casey Jones, we are really lucky that they did not have a fight on a subway train, because if they did, Shredder would have been eating turtle soup.
Oh, absolutely. All those turtles would have been, I mean, they'd have been delicious. I mean, they're big turtles, too. You know, those foot soldiers, they'd have had a meal for a long. Wait, were the foot soldiers the robots in the cartoons?
Yeah, they were robotic ninjas.
I don't even remember,
right?
If they were robots or not.
Well, I mean, Shredder could have just put those things in the freezer. He's set.
Wait. Hold on now. How do we know that the turtle soup is good? Because, like, with lobster, you kind of want big lobster, but when the lobster gets too big, the quality of the meat goes down.
But let
like,
me
maybe it's like that with turtles.
So you're Shredder. Yeah. You've been literally fighting four teenage turtles that love pizza, and they've been foiling you every step for 10 years. You're
That's
not going to.
They were carb loaded on pizza. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to eat them.
Well, I mean, I'm going to eat them. I'm just wondering if, like, I would have preferred to have like eight smaller turtles.
Well, this is what I would do. After I ate those turtles, I would get eight smaller turtles, and I'd have Casey Jones lead a mission on a train so I could eat those smaller turtles.
Oh. That's right. Maybe younger, their kung fu wouldn't be as good either.
Yeah, exactly. I like, they wouldn't be as lean. They wouldn't be as muscular. You know, they'd probably be a little bit more fatty. You're set.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, eating a Ninja Turtle would be kind of tough. Like, the meat would be kind of chewy and tough, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Raphael would be kind of spicy.
I don't know. Like, I'm envisioning Hannibal now with one of the Leonardo's head cut off, Ray Liotta, or Billy Zane. We could switch him in that role. Oh, and when he had his skull off and Hannibal was eating his brains.
Are we really having a discussion about eating the Ninja Turtles and what they would taste like?
Hey, we go where the conversation takes us.
Okay.
See, the Goodfellas seed was planted earlier with Ray Liotta, and before you know it, a Ninja Turtle is eating his own brain.
Right.
But, like, and also his train attacks have really long standing consequences. Basically, everybody on that train dies, right? So there's only two people left. And then in Captain America, they kidnap Bucky. He becomes a Winter Soldier. And because of them kidnapping Zola on the train, he integrates Hydra into the world, and Hydra takes over S.H.I.E.L.D., and they've been like running the world for 60 years. So, I mean, there would be long train, you know, like,
that
so. What would the long-term effect be on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
There would be no more Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and that sounds awful.
Like, there would just be a bunch of jerk foot soldiers, like, running amok through the town.
Like, yeah. Bebop and Rocksteady would just be kicking butt of the local police force and, like, robbing banks.
Hey, guys, you know that alien in Ninja Turtles universe, Krang or whatever?
Yeah,
Emperor Kang.
What would he taste like? I think it's kind of soft, like a marshmallow, right?
I mean, he is like a brain,
right? Yeah, I don't know. Like, it
so, if
be
you
chewy.
Mix like a ground chuck beef with a marshmallow,
okay? Yeah, so you just put them on the grill,
yeah,
and just put them like in between two hamburger buns.
Get them on the Weber.
Yeah, the Krang burger.
I feel like we should do a special on the best brain eating scenes of film.
The best brain. Yeah. All right, well, wait. I know about Hannibal.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. Return of the Night of the Living Dead. Bring more cops.
Like, zombie movies will just be its own category. But there was a scene where Vincent D'Onofrio plays a drug dealer in this movie called The Salton Sea, starring Val Kilmer, where he's eating beef brains. And Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, they're eating monkey brain.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, I'll bet we could really add up some brain-eating movies.
I think the world needs it.
In Star Trek Wrath of Khan, he has the seti eels, which burrow into your brain and lay eggs, and then the larvae eat their way through and you go mad. That's kind of a brain eating.
That's playing the long game right there.
But like, like that's just like too much. I'm like, what did Khan do to me? Are you serious? Are you serious right now?
The little thing looked like a doodle bug, and then it just bores into your brain.
Well, speaking of Star Trek with spaceships, like, you never want to be on a ship with Chris Evans either. So, like, in Fantastic Four, they go into space, they get bombed by gamma rays. In Sunshine, they only on a Chris Evans thing do you go to save the sun, reignite the sun, and you get attacked by a Colonel Kurtz guy named Pinbacker who has, like, squishy skin, all right? And Avengers, they spend 50 minutes trying to fix a plane engine. Like something, Captain America, he crashes, becomes an ice cube. Captain America 2, that plane flies into the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters. You don't want to be in any – oh, in Push, he has that woman shoot that guy in the head. I mean, who knows where that bullet went? Maybe the whole plane blew up. So you never want to be on a flying vehicle with Chris Evans around.
So basically planes, trains, and dare I say, automobiles?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know too much about automobile. I know he rides motorcycles.
No, that's an automobile.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, you don't want any of those. Or John Candy would not go with him on one of those trips.
No.
John Candy never would have fit comfortable on any motorcycle, though. Oh.
Yeah.
Too soon.
Aw.
Too soon.
But like, also,
I'm just saying because he's big. That wasn't like he wouldn't because he's dead. I didn't mean it like that.
Chris Evans could make it work.
Yeah.
He could make America. John Candy on a bike work.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like a bear on a mini bike in a circus.
Dude, everybody loves that, though.
Except for the bear.
Who invented the mini bike?
Not John Candy.
Not John Candy.
But like also with Chris Evans, the final boss is always a red face like Bertman. So in Captain America, he battles Red Skull. In Sunshine, he's battling Pinbacker, who's been destroyed by the sun. There's just incredible pieces of machinery get destroyed. So that train in Snowpiercer was going to run for eternity. He killed it, right? The spacecraft in Sunshine was capable of transporting a crew to the sun while carrying a massive explosive payload. It blew up. The aircraft in Captain America was so advanced in 1945, it would be advanced today. He crashed it into a snowy abyss.
So do you guys think that Chris Evans just gave his agent like a list of things that he looks for in certain roles? Like, in order for me to be in this movie, it has to have a shield. It has to have one of these things, a train, plane, and a motorcycle.
I have to crash it.
Yeah, I have to crash it. There has to be a bad guy whose face is red or burnt. Right?
Yeah.
What else?
No.
Yeah.
Wait, so Chris Evans was in a Hitman movie with Michael Shannon. And even though none of these themes that we've been discussing happen in the movie, his name is Mr. Freezy and the movie is called The Iceman.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm telling you, he's the Iceman. He's been frozen a bunch of times. He's always getting frozen in movies. And then in this one, doesn't he get killed in it? Doesn't he get put in a freezer?
I mean, did he die in a freezer?
I feel like he did, but I don't know if he did. During the break.
Mr. Freezy and the Iceman, though. Mr. Freezy. Either way, it's just an odd reach of a correlation, but it's there no matter what.
Yeah. So he's really good at fighting goons in close quarters. So in Winter Soldier and Snowpiercer, he fought him in a train car. In moving close quarters. So he fought bad guys in a moving train and a moving elevator in tiny close quarters. Right?
Yeah.
Those are moving. He overperforms against all odds. So in Captain America, he was that little skinny guy, and no one could get up that flagpole, but he just pulled the little pin out. In Snowpiercer, he should have failed, but he kept going.
Wait, I got you. Ready? In Puncture, he plays a drug-addicted lawyer in a David versus Goliath-style legal drama.
Yeah, exactly. So he, he's this lawyer. And you know what? He was really ripped in that, too, and he was a heroin addict. That's impossible against all odds. So, I mean, he always has like gamma rays, vita rays, ultraviolet rays in his films. He's always dealing with something like that. David,
right. Yeah. In Cellular, the movie starts with him walking along near the beach, getting some sun. He was getting some ultraviolet rays in that.
Well, what goes to the cell phone? There's got to be some form of, like, you know, satellite imagery coming down on him, right?
Yeah. You think his agent is just like, how much do you think he gets paid? Because it doesn't sound like he gets paid enough.
Yeah.
Like, I need, this is what client wants, and I need, like, these kind of roles.
Like, someone help me out here. What did they use to make him Captain America? Was that a kind of ray?
No.
Vita ray. It was Vita rays.
I don't even know what that is.
I think it's a comic book thing. Yeah, no, because, yeah, it was Vita rays.
No.
Definitely, like that, or gamma rays.
That's Latin for life.
Yeah, that, well, yeah, no, I'm telling you, Vita rays in Captain America.
Okay.
No, didn't they just inject him with, like, the comic book version of steroids? Right?
Listen to me, Lazavath.
Okay. I'm listening.
They used Vita rays.
Vita rays.
They were liquefied rays.
Yeah.
Liquefied rays. Because that makes even more sense.
They irradiated the comic book steroids. They irradiated it with Vita rays.
You know what I should have checked? If his name was Ray in any of these movies.
You know, I rather doubt that it was, but you got me thinking now.
I'm telling you, gamma rays. No, Vita rays. And gamma rays was Fantastic Four. Ultraviolet rays was Sunshine. And Vita rays was Captain America. Here, I'm going to type in Captain America Vita rays online here.
Let me know what it says. Let me know what it says.
talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. No, gamma rays was Incredible Hulk, right? I'm not wrong about that.
But gamma rays was just like a Marvel Universe thing, perhaps. Like, maybe it just came up more than once.
That's true.
Vita rays are a part of the super soldier serum that speeds up the potion's effects on Captain America.
So it was steroids. Like, they injected him.
don't take our hero Captain America and say that he's using steroids. That is not kosher, my friend.
So he got injected with a quote-unquote serum.
This is not like Barry Bonds getting massaged and not knowing he's doing steroids, okay? This is not like one of those Major League Baseball scams. He is Captain America. He is everything that is good and an American hero. Don't you soil the sanctity of Captain America.
So that scene in Captain America where he's strapped to that gurney and he's injected with needles, like, that's just water that they're pumping him with?
No, it's Vita rays.
Okay.
It's Vita rays, guys.
I still don't understand how you inject someone with rays.
Vita raises and vitamins.
Okay.
Listen, all right, here it is. This German fellow, he harnessed Vita rays. He put it into a steroid that could contain...
It was a steroid. You said steroid.
It was. It was definitely a steroid. Okay. I think it was.
Yeah.
They call it a super serum. But, I mean, that's not going to hold up in court.
No.
Wait, hold on. I wonder what year they came up with that line of that part of the story in the Marvel comic book universe, because if it was like this was before the 1970s, the notion of steroids didn't even exist back then. Only the Germans knew about it, but we didn't even know the Germans were juicing it until like the 70s, I think.
Well, a German did give it to him in this film.
So it's German steroids.
I'm just saying, like, then we didn't know about that. We just thought he was injecting, I don't know, multivitamins.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super serum, guys.
He eats his Wheaties through a needle.
And he stays like that for like a billion years.
I feel like this debate is going to rage on. But while we continue the debate, I think now's a good time to cut to commercials. And we'll see you guys later with hopefully a definitive answer to whether or not Captain America is juicing or not.
Vita rays.
Today, for you listeners of the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you all the opportunity to check out their services. Now, today, I'd personally like to recommend the audiobook for Clive Barker's The Thief of Always. The Thief of Always is a dark adult fable about a child who finds his Neverland paradise, but finds that it comes at a dark price. Now, I've actually read this book 3 times, once as a child and twice as an adult, and every time I've very much enjoyed it in different ways. So I think this is for all mature ages. If this sounds familiar, this movie title, it's because we actually addressed it today during our listener questions. So I highly recommend Clive Barker's Thief of Always. And to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark. Shark for your free audiobook today.
Hey guys, John here with a special sneak peek. Was it a sneak peek or early listen? Well, anyway, here's a new trailer for the new fictional podcast from Shark Drop Studios, Paralyzed.
Please state your name for the camera. David.
Huh?
State your name.
David Summers.
And why are you here?
Because you think I killed them.
Killed who? Killed who, David?
My friends.
And did you?
No, 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 I didn't.
Then who did?
It doesn't matter.
Because you don't believe me anyways. For the record, please.
It killed them. All of them.
By it, you mean this man from your dreams?
No.
Then who? This looks like, right, Mr. Summers?
Yes, I do.
And according to you, by this written statement, you predicted this by way of what you call sleep paralysis.
Yes.
So if you knew, why didn't you say anything?
I tried. But it's already too late.
And what exactly happened out there, Mr. Summers?
There was something out there with us! Something that
Mr.
wouldn't
Summers,
let us leave.
I ask you to calm down.
It wanted us to
David.
Die. It wanted us to suffer.
All right, that's enough.
Oh,
restrain him. Come to the table.
Coming summer of 2015, Paralyzed, brought to you by Shark Dropper Studios.
Welcome back to the Kurt Russell Hour. We never really came to a general consensus of whether or not it was Vita Rays, quote unquote, or steroids.
It was Vita Rays.
No.
It was Vita Rays.
It's not.
I'll tell you one thing that we all can agree on. Kurt Russell does not do steroids.
No. No. He
lifts plywood all day.
You know what steroids are made from? Kurt Russell's sweat.
they collect it when he's pressing plywood. They just collect his sweat.
What, pressing plywood?
Nope.
Why would he be doing that?
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, I shouldn't question the Kurt Russell.
I mean, Kevin Bacon danced in a weird warehouse that was perfectly suited for not pole vaulting, but the bars. Like, everything was set up for dancing in that place for some reason. You're telling me there's not a factory there somewhere where you can work out?
That's true.
So,
that's true.
Wait. So remember in Superman, in the original Superman, they had like the exhibit at the museum where one of his hairs was holding like a ton of steel.
Yeah.
Like suspended from it. So how did they get that hair? Like, some people say Superman just plucked it and gave it to him. What I think is that they used a really small tool fashioned from one of Kurt Russell's baby teeth to break it.
Ripley's Believe It.
all right. I think now's a good time to
pull us out of this hole.
Yes. Now's a good time to jump into another listener question. Mark, what's the third listener question we got today?
All right, so the third one is from Lacey, and it's the best or worst TV show turned into a movie or movie turned into a TV show. So I think the worst is Wild Wild West, the TV show to the movie, because You have the Oscar winner, Kevin Klein. You have Will Smith, Oscar-nominated actor. Kenneth Branagh, $150 million budget. And it was just the biggest not funny pile of poop I've ever seen. I don't know why I said poop. But it was the biggest. It was just – it wasn't funny. It was all ego. I didn't even – Men in Black had a much better song to it by Will Smith than Wild 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 West, Jim West, Desperado.
You're not a Cisco rider. Fan?
I don't want to know.
Through the whole song?
I think I remember a lot more of it than I – we're going straight to
the Wild West.
We're going straight. Hey, we're products of the 90s, guys. Okay. I worked in a movie theater, and this song – this is Bailamos. Remember that? It played on a CD on a loop. So when you worked every day, you heard the song about 40 times a day. But yeah, I got tired of that. But I think my favorites are – this is random, but I love Georgia Jungle as a cartoon that became a movie. I love that. The Fargo movie went into Fargo, the TV show, and I love that. Billy Bob
Thornton. I love that show, too. Dude, that's fantastic.
You know, I guess, you know, Billy Bob Thornton's the nicest guy, you know, actor type I've ever worked with. And I thought he was great. I loved everything about that show. And then, you know, Jackass, their movies were really good. You guys probably took that one, so I don't want to take it. And then you can't forget about Stargate, the movie, spawned like 214 episodes, I think even more, of a TV show.
Yeah.
Stargate was pretty fantastic, and a Kurt Russell movie.
Yeah.
And it made all those episodes. That might be the most successful show from a movie right there because of Kurt Russell.
That's true.
Everyone just keeps watching, hoping Kurt Russell will one day show up. The 214 episodes and counting. He still hasn't shown up. People keep watching.
You know, I just don't get it, Deborah. I watch this show, but there's no Kurt Russell. I tune in every week, and I just keep thinking maybe. But it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, Hank, just be patient.
You gotta keep watching.
You know, I gotta say, for me, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show that – didn't that come from a movie? Wasn't the movie first?
Okay, no.
The movie's like 1989.
It was originally a comic book. Then they made a cartoon. Then they made a movie.
Then the movie was awesome from the cartoon.
Yeah. Well, the cartoon's a TV show. So
yeah.
I mean, technically, you're right.
And Sam Rockwell was in it.
Yeah, he was. I enjoyed the first Ninja Turtles movie.
Wait, Sam Rockwell was in the first Ninja Turtles movie?
Yeah, he was the guy that was eating the turtles at the end.
Oh, spoiled.
No, he was like the young punk kid. Who are the guys in the dorm rooms? Like the RAs? He was like the RA of the
The bad teen gang.
Yeah,
yes.
That's really obscure. I don't remember that.
Sam Rockwell.
He looks really young in that movie. If you go back and just try to find like a YouTube clip, you can kind of tell it's him, but at the same time, it's like you're astonished by how fresh-faced and innocent he looks.
Did he dance in that movie?
Oh, there was a 10-minute montage. Yeah.
No, you're thinking of Vanilla Ice in the second movie.
Yeah.
You're thinking about Vanilla Ice in the second movie.
The first movie, MC Hammer did it. Turtle Power.
Oh.
Really? I don't remember that.
Oh. Yep.
Go, Ninja, go. Oh, that was Vanilla Ice.
Yeah.
That was Vanilla Ice Part 2. But MC Hammer did the song Turtle Power.
Gosh. You know what I remember about that original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie? Was the scene where Splinter was in the bathtub. And I thought it was like the darkest thing ever when I was a kid.
Oh,
I was
like, because he had just gotten like a... Or they just rescued him, right?
Yeah, that one guy beat him up. And Donatello was sitting next to him. And he was in the bathtub, this all injured. And I remember going, this is so dark. Like, I was tore up by that scene.
I think one scene that always stood out to me in the Ninja Turtles movie was Elias Koteas, who played Casey Jones. Like, he's sitting outside of that farmhouse on that swinging porch chair, whatever. He's just lying on it. You know, just like without caring and rolling an apple. Then all of a sudden, he just takes a bite out of an apple. And then, like, the chair just, like, breaks and he just falls. And
it just
like,
falls, yeah. Well,
the best part is, like, he just kind of sits up and he's like, well, what's going on?
This house is falling apart.
Like, I've always wondered if that was, like, actually supposed to happen.
Like, that was an outtake that they just kept?
That was, like, his actual reaction. It was like, wait. What am I supposed to do now?
I wonder if he stayed in character during that film. Like, the poor PAs would have had to play hockey with him, like street hockey during in between each take.
I would love to see a behind-the-scenes documentary on the first Ninja Turtles movie and only the first Ninja Turtles movie.
Wait, can it star Billy Zane and be directed by Scorsese?
Obviously.
Yeah. What do you have, Levengood? You got some shows?
Well, I had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, and even though I haven't watched it, I've never seen a whole episode, just because the show came from it, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer show.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
The movie was, like, totally inconsequential, but the TV show was awesome.
I love that show. Joss Whedon, you know, did a really good job on it, and Sarah Michelle Gellar, I had one of those big high school crushes on.
Season 3, man. I was in college, right? And so I didn't start with season 1 and 2, but I was at college at a Walmart, and I was really drunk. And I bought season 3 on DVD.
Yeah.
And that's how I got introduced to the Buffy world. It was $44.
Can I ask this? Who isn't drunk at Walmart?
I mean, you know, it was in Tallahassee. I think you know that Walmart. It was like 3 a.m. when bad decisions happen. And I was like, I'm going to get into this show. And I remember the guy with me is like, why are you starting at season 3? And I'm like, because
I'm just going to.
And it was a great season. I had it for a very long time.
So then did you go back and start at 1 and 2 and watch 3? And
I was annoyed because seasons 1 and 2 were like $15 each. I was like, man, I should have started with season 1.
Yeah.
But I love that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think, was that all you had, Levengood?
Yeah, yeah.
I think, all right, for me, the obvious one that pops out to my mind is 21 Jump Street. And I maybe watched like a handful of episodes of the Johnny Depp TV show, but I definitely watched the movie. And I really, what makes the movie great is that it really has nothing to do with the TV show. You know, it's
total disregard.
Yeah, total disregard. It's just like a threadbare connection to the show. But like, that's what makes it so great. It's so irreverent in everything it does. Even the spoiler alert, Johnny Depp cameo, which is brilliant, by the way, because no one had any clue that he was going to show up. But they killed off his character.
Yeah.
Right. So I was just like, I feel like that was just the movie's way of saying, like, yeah, we know our movie's based on a show, but we also don't care.
And didn't that wasn't like you're gonna go to 27 Jump Street? Wait, that's not right. Like, didn't he mess it up instead of saying 21 Jump Street? He said something else.
Yeah.
Sure. Don't mess with Korean Jesus.
Yeah. Ice Cube.
Keep busy with Korean shit.
Let's see what else. Obviously, A-Team. You know, I had fun watching that movie. The TV show is a classic.
Dude, they steered a tank into a lake by shooting mortars or cannon fire out of it.
I hated what they did with Mr. T in that movie.
Really?
You weren't a big fan of Rampage? You weren't a big fan of Rampage?
I don't like how he started out all peaceful. It didn't work for me. I didn't find it very convincing. I mean, I was happy when he got rough, but...
Yeah. Well, to be fair, not a lot of people can successfully imitate Mr. T. You know?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
He was basically Gandhi, and then he Gamma Ray Hulked out.
Michael Jai White would have been good in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think, he's getting old, man. I feel badly. I feel like Michael Jai White missed his sweet spot to be like a big action star.
Yeah.
He did, because
Viva La Black Dynamite, though.
He had that one kind of star turn, and, well, I don't want to say star turn, but he had that a decent cameo in A Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
For like 10 minutes.
Well, no. He had a great lead fighting movie, like a martial arts movie called Blood and Bone. And in that movie, I mean, he had amazing stunts, amazing fighting choreography. Like, it rivaled a lot of the greats, like movies with Scott Adkins or even the, even for brief moments, the Raid Redemption movie. So, I mean, absolutely check that out. But he was fantastic. You got to see him without his shirt. You got to see him fight multiple people. He's doing jump kicks. He's got long, wide-angle fight scenes. But that was, like, his one movie. And I was hoping that after that, he'd kind of come out as a big action star. But for whatever reason, no one picked up on it. Like, have you guys even heard of Blood and Bone? Like, I'm going on and on about it.
Yeah, no, I know. I heard about it. I heard very, very good things about it. It kind of came out the same time as Universal Soldier Regeneration, where those movies were kind of having a renaissance on direct-to-DVD.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably at least 5 years old, maybe 8 years old.
Maybe 17 years old.
Oh.
It's not that old.
I'll definitely check it out.
It's pretty cool, though.
I bought it at McDonald's on VHS.
Attack of the McDonald's DVDs, the inappropriate movies from the Happy Meals callback.
I think, yeah. Before real quick, before we move on to the second topic, I think my favorite movie turned TV show. It's kind of weird. I'm going on a technicality again, but I'm calling it a TV show because it's on TV so often. But I'm saying The Replacements. You know, it's on TV so much. Yeah, it's a theatrical release, but like it's played on TV so often these days, it feels like it's a TV show. Like whenever it's on TV, I don't want to turn the channel. You know,
yeah, I could watch that movie all day. I love that movie.
It's just so comforting to watch. You know, freaking Shane Falco try to reclaim his career in life.
Well, it's so cheeky and it has such a personality because it was supposed to be R-rated. It was PG-13.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, dude, we should do a Keanu Reeves replacement, a football playing thing.
Well, that's like one movie, though, right?
I'll tell you one thing that Chris Evans has never done in a film. He's never been a quarterback.
That's true.
Yeah. Is that true? And The Perfect Score, was he a jock?
Oh, crap. And he was in Another Teen Movie. Son of a B.
Oh, that's a horrible misfire. All of your credibility as a Chris Evans filmographical expert is lost.
I should have added football player.
So it wasn't Vita Rays. It was Steroids.
Yo, Vita Rays.
Okay. All right. I think we've answered that question pretty thoroughly, or not thoroughly. I don't know. We might have gone off the rails a little bit too much there.
Like Snowpiercer.
Oh, okay. Living good. I think you have our second topic of discussion for today, so take it away.
Yeah, today I wanted to talk about Ex Machina. And just to, like, right away, let's start by talking about this title, because this is the first time I've ever said it, like, Ex Machina. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. I always thought it was Ex Machina, right? I'm buying the movie ticket. I asked the person selling the tickets what they call it. They're like, Ex Machina, Ex Machina, Ex Machina. They had no idea, like, what to call it. So I just found out today from Mark, because Mark hit the books and went to the MFF scrolls and found the real why is it called Ex Machina?
Well, Deus Ex Machina. So that, you know, that the phrase. And so they just took out the deuce and had Ex Machina. And so I think it's really confusing. Like, when I went to the movie theater to go watch it, I was like, yeah, two for deuce. Two for Ex Machina. Oh, deuce, I guess. two for Ex Machina. And the little kid at the counter was like, yeah, so two for Ex Machina. And I went, yeah, two for Ex Machina.
That's what you tell that kid. You tell that little punk.
I had a Dane Cook moment with him. Like, then I call him Chief.
That kid clearly never took Latin.
But let me tell you something, guys. All right, so John, this is yours, but I just want to put one thing in. In a day and age of remakes, prequels, sequels, reboots, Chris Evans films, Sam Rockwell dancing, too much. All right, too much. We get a movie with four characters, right? Four. But you know what? Oh, so listen, guys, this is going to be spoiler. We're going to spoil the crap out of this film.
We are going to spoil it.
So, you know, I hope you enjoyed, you know, stay with us if you've watched it. But, like, I do recommend a good version experience for it. But we are going to spoil this film. But it's just four people in basically one location. Lots of dialogue. But it is exciting, engrossing, educated, smart, fun, glorious.
Yeah, and Mark, as Mark said, you know, it's pretty much one location after we get into the movie, after the short little intro. And because of that, like, they call it, it's a bit like a chamber thriller. You're really kind of locked into this one big set with multiple rooms in this location by the creator of this Ex Machina. And what we get is interesting, because this chamber, we feel like we're never really taken out of our comfort zone in the sense that we think something's coming. But all the dialogue is what takes us out of our sense of ease. As we learn more and more in the movie, it's just the dialogue. It's not like a horror movie with a tense buildup looking down the hallway. This is purely psychological, our thrills. And I think that's what makes this movie work so much. And the movie teases our sympathy for the characters as much as it plays with our suspicions.
And so for me, if you've been reading the blog for some time, I write about Alex Garland a lot. And he wrote The Beach. He wrote 28 Days Later. He wrote Sunshine. He wrote Never Let Me Go and Dread. This guy is an 28 Days Later. He is an amazing writer. And the stuff he does is some of my favorite films. And so he got tired of writing the scripts and having his scripts kind of be reworked. You know, there were some problems with Sunshine. So he decided for $15 million, which is like the craft services budget of Avengers Age of Ultron, to tell an original story that was fully under his control. And he got Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson. He got Alicia Vikander, I believe her name is, this great Swedish actress. And I love it. I guess the plot is the beginning of the film. What I love is it's Domhnall Gleeson. He plays a guy named, Caleb. He's sitting at his desk. He wins some lottery. The next thing you know, he's in the wilderness walking to this place that's actually in Sweden and it actually is a hostel, but he's going to this high-tech lab. Levin Good, you want to carry it from there?
Well, yeah, and he's going to location of this kind of Google kind of mogul who's been working on AI, and that lottery was to pick a good one of the programmers to perform a Turing test on his AI creation. And, you know, let's just totally, like, derail from talking about the movie in general. And I want to talk about this creator. This was Oscar Isaac, the actor. Originally, I thought this was the little Jewish kid from 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it's the guy who gave the great performance as the star role in A Most Violent Year.
And Inside Llewyn Davis. Like, this guy is amazing.
But, yeah, this guy, I mean, he captured everything that you would expect like a hold-up genius engineer savant to have. I mean, he expressed addiction, impatience for a lot of social aspects, but patience for a lot of methodical things. He had his addictions to his work, and also there was a lot of vulnerability and addiction and social facility to alcohol. They used alcohol as a big tool in this movie to cover his whole range of emotion, from trust to distrust to closeting himself and opening up. And I thought that was an interesting kind of side mechanism being used. But he was almost sociopathic at times.
You know what I liked about him is a lot of people are starting to – they're calling him a bro in this film. And I read some complaints that you don't really understand that he's the villain. He doesn't make himself evil enough. And Oscar Isaac, he fought to not come across as that evil creator.
Well, I think that's brilliant, because something that I felt when I was watching this movie is that, okay, first we meet him and he's friendly to Caleb, right? The programmer who's going to do the Turing test. And then Caleb meets Ava, and we start to sympathize for an emotional or mental relationship between them. And then later, Isaac starts tug-of-warring with Ava for the trust of Caleb. And Caleb isn't entirely sure who to trust. We're not really sure who to trust, because we kind of get evidence to distrust Ava and to distrust Isaac. So we don't really know who the good is in it, even though he seems to be the bad guy as the creator, who's kind of keeping his creation locked up until it's tested.
He has some weird stuff going on.
But, like, yeah, he's got a lot – there's a lot of weird stuff that's revealed about that character in the movie that I don't want to spoil while we're spoiling so much. But at the same time, like, it starts out – it's playing on our sympathies a lot, yeah, in the beginning, especially with Caleb and this physically attractive in the face anyway, this robot, this AI robot. But then as we learn more and more about the movie, we realize that there are hidden agendas among all three of our characters. Yeah, and they're kind of all being revealed at the same time.
And, you know, in the beginning, Domhnall Gleeson's character, who's sent there to do the Turing test, Caleb, he talks about the best way to test a chess computer program is to have it do something other than chess. And what I love about this film is Alex Garland said this. This is a quote. He said, "This film is partly about the degree to which you establish or fail to establish what's going on in someone else's head." So, and like part of the thing is that's happening in the film is, what is Nathan, Oscar Isaac? Is he as he appears at face value, or is he an act he's putting on in order to serve the terms of the test he set up? So in this film, these people, they all mess up on key levels. They all misunderstand each other on key levels. I love it. I love how Oscar Isaac, he doesn't appreciate Caleb as much, and that comes back to bite him. Caleb doesn't really understand Nathan, and they both don't understand Ava at all. They don't even think about her having a mind of her own. They're very condescending to her, and she kind of plays them both. It's just so layered, and it's three people, or four, three people talking in a location.
Yeah, and I again, that's what carried me away. You know, this isn't one of those movies where you sit there tense and physically tense when you're worried about the scare coming, so to speak. But as you learn more, you get a little nervous, and you know, the scale keeps weighing a little more towards trusting Ava, for Caleb to trust Ava, and then a little more for maybe we should listen to Isaac, and then oh no, back to Ava, and the whole time, no evidence for one seems to be disproving our trust in the other. They're just both building a little more trust. It's almost scary in the sense that you're not specifically convinced to be on one side.
And you know what I love about the big not, there's no twists in this film, but what I love about I can't think of another word, but the character, the plot developments, is that they come across very organically. These people are smart, the three of them are, but they mistrust, they misjudge the other people in their own course. And no, I love it. And I love that this film has sparked a huge debate. There's been a lot of talk about feminism. You know, a lot of people are writing, well, Michael Fassbender in Prometheus was never dealt with sexually, so why does this woman have to be like this? But I feel like Ava was trapped, and she read Domhnall Gleeson the second he walked into that room. So, you know, someone said, why can't she talk to him about war? But that's not going to get her out of this place, because he's only visiting for 5 days. You know, he won this lottery. He's there for 5 days. She read the situation, was able to play it very well.
Sure, yeah. And even if you think that she's playing it, you still wonder how much sincerity there might be hidden in there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how much is real? Like, do I have to get out of here with you, or do I just have to get out of here?
I think she wanted just to get out.
You know, it's interesting, though. You said that, that you know, there wasn't really a twist, and I agree with that statement in general. But even though, like, there wasn't, like, a twist necessarily, I feel like with all the different distrusts that were going on with us wondering who to trust, that we still didn't necessarily expect the result.
Yeah.
Like, some people might have predicted, but I didn't feel there's evidence to expect.
This is a weird example, but Craig Ferguson, when he talks about Game of Thrones, he goes, Game of Thrones, dun, dun, dun. It's like, you know, those plot twists that come at you and they're like, dun, dun, dun. And you're like, what? Bruce Willis sees dead people? there's none of that. And I feel like the twists and turns in this film are earned.
Would the movie have been better?
The only prediction that I had that was true was that something very bad was going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. What do you think, Laz?
Well, I mean, I didn't see the movie, so it's like...
Oh, that's no fair. You had 2 weeks.
Oh, what?
We're calling out the producer.
Yeah.
Well, so, busy. I mean...
No, I knew you guys would do a good job.
What's that?
I knew you guys would do a good job.
That's fair. So wait, I want to bring up something totally random, and this really like brings out one of the coolest things to me about the Oscar Isaac's character, the creator character, and that's what I'll call the dance scene.
Yeah,
Mark, you know what I'm talking about when I say the dance scene
with him and Kyoko.
Like, This is no Sam Rockwell fun dance scene. When this dance scene happens, it happens and it's introduced to you in such a way that almost seems like you're in a dream. It's like surreal, and it mixes sociopathy with surrealism, I guess. It felt like I was out of my body when I was watching that.
Yeah, I think that's what he wanted too. I think that's what he wanted to create. I think he was using this kid the whole time. And so I think it took that scene, that dance scene, took his mind off what he was really feeling. So, I mean, this is a game of chess between three people.
That's true. And the thing is that A is against B, B is against C, and A is against C.
Yeah. And I just think – I just love that they didn't – with Ava, you know, the director and writer, he wrote, I just feel huge affection for Ava. I wrote this script. It was all about Ava before I've even written the first line. I knew that I was crazy about Ava before I got to that scene. The film is all about how amazing Ava is, basically. And so it's kind of everything. I love the design. I love the behavior. She can be cunning but not necessarily – like, I don't know. I liked and he said, it's nice writing characters that are smart. Films often try to stop you from doing that in various ways. They can be cunning, but not necessarily smart. And Megan, my wife, gets really annoyed about movies that try to, I don't know, be really smart, but they're not smart. Like, you know, those kind of films. But this one actually is. It doesn't pander. I couldn't recommend this film more.
Yeah, and you know, on the note of being smart, like just the writing, and then the characters, what they did with that writing seemed brilliant to me. Because so you have Ava, right? And Ava is innocent and naive in the sense of what she hasn't experienced in the world, but she is literally brilliant and has access to the world's search engine to understand the world.
Yeah.
Right? So she is amazingly brilliant, but still we'll call her emotionally naive. She has the data, but not the experiences. It's like they say in the movie, you may know everything there is about the sky, but you don't know what it feels like to see the sky. And then you have Caleb, right? Brilliant guy, but emotionally naive, romantically naive, and he's set against her. And then you have Isaac, who's emotionally shut off, it seems, in this movie, other than his investment in this project. But he is, and he seems to be the, you know, super brilliant and manipulative. And so you have these three things that all weighing and playing out in front of us. And I feel like the synthesis between these intellects is amazing.
And I think what killed Nathan was his hubris. I think he thought that nobody would get one over on him. And he had no oversight. There was no lab. There was no people there. He kind of blocked himself off to the world, and that's how this whole thing happened. And but you know, there's a scene where Caleb and Nathan are talking, and Nathan or Caleb tells Nathan, like, that's the history of gods, that you created artificial intelligence. And Oscar Isaac's like, I like that. And we should quote that in a year from now. Like, you called me a god. Like, he believed it. Like, he liked
that. And then even Caleb corrected him. He says, no, I didn't say that. I said this. And he says, yeah, no, but you're calling me a god.
Yeah. Like, and he had that. And that, how did that work out for him? But
it's what is the famous quote? It's always the son that kills the father, or in this case, the creation that kills the creator.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's like I love films like this, man. I love these small, brainy. I like films that think they're smart and they actually are smart.
So I was going to ask you guys where Ex Machina ranks among movies that deal with AI, but it sounds like it wouldn't be doing that movie justice if I had to make you rank this movie with, like, you know, something like Short Circuit.
It won't be. You know, someone else made a point. They're like, Johnny Five never had to deal with being sexualized, but it had to deal with a man pretending to be an Indian with face paint on. Yeah. But Blade Runner, for instance, it's. All right, so the difference between Blade Runner and Ex Machina is Ex Machina is extremely polished, and Alex Garland had full creative control. And so he made this movie for the cheap, and it was extremely liberating and fun, and he loved every second of it. Blade Runner, it was like a knife fight for Ridley Scott to accomplish what he wanted. It wasn't what the studio wanted. It wasn't what audiences expected it, but now it's looked at as brilliance. So Ex Machina is – the guy hates to be called an auteur, Alex Garland. But Ex Machina is a singular vision that was not messed with. Blade Runner, you know, with Priss and the replicants, that was, I think, a fantastic film that was initially messed with and tinkered with. So the difference between the two is Alex Garland had full creative control. And that's why this film could have lived or died on that. It could have been terrible, pretentious, bloated, or it could have been a fantastic film. And that's why I think it's hard to compare these AI movies, because, you know, Spielberg took over for Kubrick. So it wasn't exactly Spielberg's style. So there's so many different stories between the AI films.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think of more recent films, like there's The Machine, Transcendence, and Chappie. And The Machine was more about the evolution of self-awareness in the self-aware AI, but there was a whole lot going on around it that had nothing to do with just that. And then Transcendence had to do with trusting the simulation of self-awareness versus truly being self-aware. But again, there was this whole other big scale agenda of a story wrapped around it. And then in Chappie, the action plot story, you know, wrapped around it, and Chappie learning what it was to be, was just as important as the people influencing him around him and making Chappie the way he was. Whereas this movie, it's all about this self-aware entity intellectually or emotionally competing with non-AI individuals. Like the whole movie, it really felt like it was about that. I feel like this movie had more of a focus on the AI entity than any of these other movies that try and tap into AI.
Yeah, this was a fully formed creation. And I guess for the people talking about why did this, I mean, the marketing's been weird. Like the poster of Ex Machina shows Ava like doing the classic like butt shot. it's like, what? But I think she read the situation. And I think if she was in another situation that it required her smart, she would have used that. I think in here she saw that Domhnall Gleeson was incredibly naive, and so did Oscar Isaac. That's why he brought him there. And so she played the two against each other. And because of Oscar Isaac having that God, you know, I don't know, thinking he was he was brilliant, but he underestimated two people, and those two people were his downfall. And actually it was everyone's downfall except for Ava.
As it turns out, the thing that he underestimated the most and that was his biggest downfall was the same thing that created the trust with Caleb in the first place. And again, that's the running sub-theme through the movie, and that's Oscar Isaac's character, Nathan, and alcohol. Alcohol just opened the door to everything.
Yeah, for sure. Like he was out there in the middle of nowhere. It helped him box, I guess.
But I mean, it's like, I'm not saying this is some cautionary tale about alcoholism. Absolutely not. It was just a good device that was utilized.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's a good film, guys. Watch it.
So you guys definitely recommend it then. All right. I'll give it
2 frozen Chris Evan thumbs up.
Yeah, and I'll say that even if it's not a huge twist at the end, I didn't see it coming too well necessarily, and it haunted me. The end. It haunted me.
Yeah. I will say the only reason why I didn't watch the movie is because I decided to go with the other AI-themed movie that released around the same time, Avengers 2, Age of Ultron.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
Whatever. I love James Spader in that, but that's not an AI movie.
Yeah. All right. Let's. I think now's a good time to wrap up this podcast. I think, we got some quick plugs to make, right?
www.moviesfilmsandflicks.com. Head to Shark Dropper. Go to iTunes. Share, like, comment. We need rate and a review our podcast if you enjoy it. Share it to your friends, guys. Let us know how turtles taste.
Oh,
let us know how turtles taste. Yeah, and thank you to all of our Facebook listeners for those questions today.
Awesome. All right. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Kurt Russell.
Peace out.
And John Levengood.
Kurt Russell.
Have a good night, folks.
I've been your host, John Lasso. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
the target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.